Grannies, to this hour late edition of the Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. I always start the shows by telling you folks that we are viewer-supported stations, so if you're able to kick a few dollars into the kitties for either station, I know they would much appreciate the help. There's lots of work that goes on behind the scenes to make these shows possible. I'm joined today by a gentleman that I just love talking with. I call him a real spark plug because he is a man with incredible courage, because what Kevin's been through here in the last 4 or 5 years would have brought a lot of us to our knees. And here he is kicking harder and stronger than ever. Kevin Johnson, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you back, my friend.
Hey, Barry, it is so good to hear your voice again. It's been far too long. For the general public's knowledge, I was banned by the Ontario government from being on social media of any kind. So this is the type of show, if I had done this show, I would have been arrested. And I actually was arrested for being on Laura Lynn Thompson's show. What we had there was an overzealous police officer in Mississauga that really doesn't like me. And she decided that I just had to be arrested for being on Laura Lynn's show, and that's exactly what she did. So I'll say this here. Yeah, well, you know, they put me into the court system now 143 times in 3 years. And as I think the general public knows, they also put me in maximum security prison for 6 weeks for the sole purpose of getting me to stop talking about the Liberal government and COVID-19 and the handling of everything that's been done, or the lack of handling, sorry, by the Liberal Party. And there are select individuals that have sued me now to the tune of $10.5 million now. And in three cases, those lawsuits that were filed against me were awarded by what we call Sharia-friendly judges without a trial. I was not able to even question the individuals that brought lawsuits against me. So this is what they've done to try to get me to shut up, and it hasn't worked. All they've done is made me angry. So here I am, Barry. Let's talk.
Wow.
What do you want to know? I can't wait.
Wow, Kevin. You know, well, for one, I didn't know you got arrested for your appearance on Laura Lynn's show. I listened to that program when you were on with Laura, and it was an awesome show. I didn't know you were arrested for that. I know a lot about your background and all the stuff that you've been through here in the last 4 or 5 years. It's just unbelievable that we are living in a country now that we're talking about this kind of stuff. Kevin, I thought we're supposed to live in a free country. I mean, it's just gone so far down the tubes now that if people don't see this, Kevin, they don't see the threat to this country right now. I really don't know what to say to them. I've literally covered the walls in my room with rubber, Kevin, because I'm getting a headache for banging my head against the wall, trying to get Canadians awake. Really, seriously, it's at that point. You know, the information, Kevin, it's never been more clear what's going on in this country right now. You don't have to be a rocket scientist at all to see what's going on, yet a percentage of Canadians just don't want to look at it. I don't understand that. That's one thing I just don't understand right now, Kevin, because I see the danger. I know what's coming. You know what's coming. And we're here just screaming our heads off, and yet some Canadians just don't want to hear it. Why is that, Kevin? I don't get it.
Well, you're asking. Oh, I'm starting to understand it. The older I get, the more I understand complicity, complacency. I'm not going to necessarily call it laziness, but what I will say is that most people enter their little fantasy worlds. They've got their house, their big television set, their second TV, which is smaller, their laptop, their phone, PlayStation, a coffee maker, the Tassimo that they've just bought. And now what you're going to do is ask them to think about something other than hot coffee and whatever moronic show they can watch on the tube. We, in Canada, I've said this many times, we have had it too good for too long. So the average Canadian has no clue just how hard our ancestors worked to build this country. You know, when you think about it, we didn't have immigrants in the past. When we're talking the 1800s, we had settlers. We had people that came here to tame the land, and they did. We've been riding on their coattails now for well over 100 years. And I would say that the efforts that were put forward to make this country as phenomenal as it was up to the early 90s, all of that effort seemed to just stop in the early 90s. Everyone just kind of gave up working hard. I guess everybody thought it was their right to be lazy and do nothing and go slow and not have a consequence come from laziness, inaction, and comfort. You can't stay comfortable forever. You have to leave your comfort zone to get better. Any personal trainer will tell you that. Well, as a country, we're no longer in the comfort zone, but people have, they've gone from comfortable to extremely uncomfortable with no in-between, or at least they didn't recognize the in-between stage. So now that everyone's out of a job and broke and destitute and panicking and everyone's applying for universal income, they don't know what to do.
They're really playing on that chaos factor, and that's just going to ramp up, Kevin. You know, we're only starting to see some of the things this government are capable of. I mean, watch what they're going to do here in the next 3 or 4 months. You think it's crazy now. But, you know, they tested society. They put that fear virus out there, and everybody ran and hid underneath their couches. Those people, of course, are all being monitored. The people that are wearing the masks in society right now, they're being monitored. Us people that are speaking against the government, of course, we're being monitored. And, you know, it's going to get to a point here, Kevin, that, you know, I say to people, if you don't think that Canada could fall, if you don't think everything that we have right now could be taken away from us, then you really do have your head in the sand, because it can. And it will be if we don't stop this. This thing is really getting out of control. And they didn't do it, like you said, overnight, Kevin. We've been slowly, incrementally programmed as a society to become soft, to become apathetic, to not question authority. I see that in so many people wearing these masks. Why are you wearing a mask? All you have to do is read the box. The box itself will tell you that this mask doesn't protect against the coronavirus. So why are you putting it on your face? And then if you look at the effects on it, man, we don't hear about that on the news. We don't hear about all the people that are getting sick from this because they're not handling them properly. Sure, a medical professional, Kevin, he can wear a mask, but he knows how to handle it properly. They dispose of them on a regular basis. They have proper situations, and they take breaks on a regular basis because they know the effects of hypoxia on the body. But I see people walking around with masks on their kids' faces, Kevin. I just want to walk up and slap them, literally, because, you know, you're really doing damage to your child. Because the government tells you there's an invisible virus out there killing people? It really is one of the biggest scams ever played on the human race, in my opinion. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, okay. You guys know that I've got a book coming out called Masks or BS. So first off, I agree with everything you've said. In reference to the masks, you know, certainly it is your right to wear one, but I am a big communication guy. I'm really big into language, and I'm the first one to tell you that even though my vocabulary is over 100,000 words, that words are not language. It's everything. It's your hand gestures, your body posture, your facial expressions, the lifting of your eyebrows, the twitching of your face, whatever it might be. All of that is part of communication. And now we've taken away so much of it, because the lower half of your face is where all the muscles are, and that's where you're going to that's where you're going to communicate the most. I mean, if I was to tell you, nice shoes, but I've got a grimace on my face, then you know I'm being sarcastic. If I say nice shoes and I'm smiling while I'm looking at your shoes, then you know that I'm seriously complimenting you. That's how it really works. And they've taken that away from us now.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't want us talking to each other. What a great way to do it, you know, put a muzzle over their face and do it in the name of protecting each other from a virus that, to me, Kevin, I've looked at all the numbers on this virus, and the fact that Health Canada came out and stated that they haven't been able to isolate this virus, well, that should resonate right to the core with anybody that has any kind of IQ. If they can't isolate it, how can we create? Okay, well, I'll get your thoughts on that right now, but that's my understanding of what they came forward and said. Go ahead.
They don't know what it means. Like, what does it mean? When I say they have not isolated the virus, the average person scratches their head saying, well, what does that mean?
Well,
okay, then I'll go one step further. I'll say that they haven't recorded the genome yet. And if they haven't recorded the genome, they can't isolate it. So like you just said, Barry, how do you create a vaccine for it? Mm-hmm. Getting people to listen to that sentence, I find, is extremely difficult. Very difficult. Go ahead.
Well, that's because it goes against everything that they've been hearing from the government for the last 6 months. It nullifies everything that the government has said to us about this virus. That, you know, I'm not a scientist, Kevin. I don't profess to be one, but I know enough about it to understand that we're all carrying a variation of a coronavirus in our bodies right now. So what are they exactly testing for? That's the big question. And this seems to knock the government's narrative right out the door, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Let me tell you why. Because that particular PCR test, as they call it, the Palmer-Reyes test, was developed by a man named Kerry Mullis. And Kerry himself came out and said, this is only to replicate DNA. What he was hoping to do was take small DNA strands, cook up a chemical test that would then expand it. So it's like photocopying DNA strands. And that way you had more DNA from a smaller sample. You could replicate it and study it, cut it, put it under the microscope, do whatever you had to do. He said it himself. This is not to be used to detect infectious diseases, because it doesn't matter what genome you have in your body, all of it's going to show up in the test. Everything. That includes hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E. That includes Ebola sickness. It includes any coronavirus, not just novella coronavirus, but any of them. All of the DNA of whatever you have is there. We carry over 1 trillion viruses in our bodies with us everywhere that we go. There are so many viruses. It's over 1 trillion.
We
carry this stuff everywhere that we go. But we create between 40,000 and 400,000 cancer cells in our body every day, and our immune system says, no, thank you. Kill that stuff.
I knew that.
But, you know, the viruses that we have in there, if you don't have viruses in your body, then your immune system has nothing to work on and nothing to learn from. And I find that now we're going to pay for this crap now. Let's be honest here. You're walking into every store where you go and you're putting alcoholic liquid on your hands to kill bacteria. So you've denied your body access to that bacteria on your hands. You're not building immunity to it. Also, soap. There's not a single soap company out there that's had soap pulled off the shelf in the last 20 years, but there's been dozens of different hand sanitizers recalled for dangerous chemicals within them. So we're utilizing dangerous chemicals to destroy bacteria that could help our immune systems. 5 years from now, everybody's going to get sick of everything because your immune systems are compromised, except mine. I've been in groups that I've been in at least 5 dozen groups now of more than 100 people, and I've been downtown now with thousands of people. Whenever someone wants a hug over masks, they get it. When somebody wants close quarters contact, you know, the handshake and the pat in the back, they get it. I'm breathing everyone else's stuff in my system, and I'm not sick at all.
Amen. I was in Vancouver last week, Kevin, and I had at least 500 hugs on Saturday, and I'm healthy as a dog. But I know that all our disorders come from immune system deficiency, attacks on our immune system over the last 20, 30 years by the chemicals, our food, everything around us is toxic. And, of course, it's had an effect on our immune systems. And now we're depriving, like you said, immune systems ability to work on a regular basis. For our immune system to function properly, it has to be exercised every day. And what we're effectively doing, like Kevin said, is we're taking that exercise away from our immune system. And, of course, you take exercise away from anything, it's going to become weak. And when it is exposed to these viruses, when it goes back out and it's exposed to all these viruses that it can't fight now because it's turned into a little bowl of jelly, we're, like Kevin said, we're all going to get sick. These psychopaths have really got this figured out, Kevin. You know, I mean, you gotta applaud their level of insanity for being psychopaths, because they know the effect this is having on society. They know the effect it's having on people's ability to communicate with each other. When I talk to somebody, Kevin, I'm always looking at their mouths, always. You know, and now we take that away. I mean, it's a great effective method to shut us up and stop us communicating amongst ourselves.
Well,
go ahead.
It is, and let me be a little bit more intimate in what I'm saying here. You know, the simple interaction between men and women, when they're macking on each other, when they're digging each other, when they're liking each other, the big thing is you want to be the one to throw that first kiss out there, and you're looking at the mouth and the eyes to see if is this my right time now?
Yep.
All that's gone. Now you have to say, hi, I would like you to remove that mask. I was thinking about kissing you for the first time. It just throws the whole romantic relationship side of it off. I mean, you know, that first kiss with the new chick you're dating is the greatest thing going. And now even that's been taken away from us. Yeah, I'm looking at this from every angle that I possibly can. Oh, I am. I'm looking at it. I mean, how many teenagers out there, you know, who are getting their first kiss or trying to get their first kiss out of the way, and they can't do it because they're wearing masks. And then on top of that, I saw some graduation videos that were recently put out where grad students are dancing with each other with masks on, but what they're doing is they're locking their elbows and they're going shoulder blade to shoulder blade, dancing that way, facing away from each other. Are you kidding me?
So I don't mean to laugh at the insanity of it, but I have to. It's sad, but I gotta laugh because it's just I mean, that video you did, that little that blurt. That why don't you bring us up a couple of lines out of that comedy you did there, Kevin? I only got to listen. You actually sent to me. I only got to listen to a little bit of it because I've been really busy. But it's hilarious. But really, we do need to laugh at this. We do.
Well,
we do because I'll go nothing but home laugh.
There's certainly a lot of jokes I've been cracking the last little while. My favorite one, of course, was in Ottawa when I announced that I was going to be running for mayor of Calgary. I said flat out, did you hear everybody? There was a man jumped out of an airplane in Toronto. His chute did not open. He speared himself on the top of the CN Tower. Cause of death, COVID-19. True story. COVID-19 is the miracle of miracles. We've now ended cancer deaths. We've ended car crash deaths. We've ended suicide deaths. Nobody dies from anything anymore except for COVID-19.
What happened to the flu virus this year?
What incredible magic power this thing has.
Exactly. What happened to the flu virus this year? We haven't heard a thing about that. Nothing. Nothing about the flu shot. Nothing. Period. Zippo. How come?
We did get some news in Ontario about the flu shot. Oh, hey, hell, we got some news about the flu shot. Ontario Premier Doug Ford has said that he's not taking the flu shot to make sure that there's enough to go around for every Ontarian. Even he doesn't want to take it. He knows what's in there.
Well, that, you know, he is such, you know, what a man, eh? Giving up his flu shot so somebody that really needs it can get it. I mean, I just can't believe the guy's got that kind of heart, Kevin. What a piece of crap that guy is. He is just unbelievable. When he first came out, I honestly thought that maybe he might be some kind of summons of the real deal. But, of course, we all found out that he's just another player. And, boy, is he's forcing some crazy draconian laws on people in Ontario. But it's coming this way, too, Kevin. We see stuff coming on. Now a guy, store here in town, says you can't come in without a mask on. Well, I walk right in, and I said, if you refuse me service in this store, I'm taking human rights. I don't wear a mask for medical exemptions. You have no reason to ask me what my medical exemption is, but I'm coming into your store. And they let me in. People got to stand up for the rights, Kevin. We really do. We're just being steamrolled by this government. I don't understand a lot of the actual laws that, you know, how it applies to our society, common law, et cetera, et cetera. I have a real hard time retaining that information, but I do understand that if we continue to let the government roll over us the way they are right now, you know, you give them an inch, they're taking a mile. Well, they're taking 2 or 3 miles here, and it's only going to continue. They're not going to stop unless we put a stop to them, period.
Well, yes, you're right, and this is part of the speech that I gave downtown Toronto. I explained to people, first off, so they understand, that bylaws, here's the big one. Bylaws are a very strange entity in this country. In the provinces of Canada, and municipalities, especially in Ontario, are not even listed in the Ontario Documents of Incorporation as entities that exist. So how is it that you have something that doesn't exist according to the province, but you've got bylaws written within it that are not laws and not statutes and not passed by Parliament or not passed by the Ontario Provincial Parliament? How is it that someone can be fined or ticketed or otherwise for a bylaw infraction? Well, I did my research, and it turns out that bylaws are nothing. They pertain to anybody that works for the city or anyone that has a contract with the city, which is why everyone who's getting tickets, municipal fines, when they take them to a real court, they win. So I want people to understand that bylaw officers, they're losers. That's all they are. They think they have authority because they've been told that. But I've been questioning all of them all over Southern Ontario, and I asked the same question. Do bylaws pertain to citizens? And they all say yes. Then I ask the next question. In which statute or law of the province of Ontario are you quoting to prove to back that statement up? I don't know. They don't know. And I haven't found one either. So what my argument here is, very simple. Bylaw officers are nobodies. You can simply tell them, leave me alone. I feel threatened. You have to go away. Call 911 saying this man's threatening me. And what they'll do is they'll tell the police officer, well, I'm trying to enforce a bylaw. You then tell the officer, there's no such thing as a bylaw that pertains to me, a citizen. This man's harassing me. Please get him away from me. And then sue the city. Like, don't put up with the crap. Don't put up with any of this stuff. So, well, I want everyone to just go ahead.
I was just going to say, Kevin, we need to educate people on that point. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, we certainly do.
But we really do need to educate people on their rights and what exactly is going on to them right now with these bylaws and enforcements and how we can stand against it. If people have that, you know, you give people that power, Kevin, and all of a sudden they're going to feel empowered, and everybody will be doing exactly what you did. Go ahead. Because we need that out there. We really do.
Here we go. With me, as soon as someone says something to me, I'm one of those guys that believes nothing. You know, I believe your name. When you tell me your name, great. If you say to me you like my shirt, I believe you. If you tell me that you drive a Porsche, okay, I believe you because I don't care if you don't. But as soon as you tell me something like, if you don't do this, you're in violation of this law and I'm going to fine you or I'm going to take something from you or I'm going to put you in handcuffs, well, now we've got a problem. Now I'm going to research it. I'm going to ask you, which law are you quoting? I'll pull my cell phone out and I'll look it up myself. If there's nothing there, then I'm going to call them out and tell them right to their face. You're lying. You are a liar. Now I need your badge number. Now I need your name because now I'm going to push this right forth to the next level. I don't like being lied to, and I certainly don't like anyone telling me that I have to comply with them if they are not someone that I like or if they're not someone who's paying me. And I've got a very simple rule in this lifetime. If you want something from me, be someone that I like. Just be a nice guy or a nice gal, and you ask me for something, and the odds are pretty good I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Hire me to do it for you, in which case I'll do it. Or point a loaded weapon at me, and you'll get what you want from me so long as that weapon is pointed at me. Those are the three instances. In any other instant when you're making demands, you're going nowhere with me. I'm not going to cave into it. I'm going to do my research, mainly because I don't demand anything of any other human being. I don't even demand their time. I just say, hello, would you like to have a conversation with me? If not, if they say no, that's their right. They're not obligated to me in any way. And I am not obligated to any bylaw officer or any police officer out there or any store owner to put on something that I don't want to wear because you are afraid of something that doesn't exist, yet you've been told does exist. If you want to fear stuff, by all means, be my guest. You're an adult. You can make your own mind up. But don't get angry with me because I do not share your fear. And that typically is the psychological reason why people lash out, is that they're afraid. They're complying with rules because they're too gutless to not comply. And they get angry with you and you won't comply because you know better. That is something that I found. That is that whole thing of if I have to do it, you do too. Well, no. No, if you decide to sever one of your fingers with a pair of scissors, I don't have to. Be my guest. Don't ask me to do so.
Yeah, and now they're going to bring along a vaccine. Yeah, who? And sad to say, Kevin, these people that are wearing the masks would be the first one to roll up their sleeves. Mark my words, because they go along to get along. They won't question the government no matter what the government says. Seems to be that way because wearing a mask alone, like I said, all you got to do is read the box, folks. And I say that to everybody wearing a mask. Read the box. It doesn't protect against the coronavirus. So why are you wearing this thing? I see people out cutting their grass wearing a mask. And I just want to get out of my car and yell at them, but you can't because they're so indoctrinated. Yeah. These people, that they're really hard to reach, Kevin. They are. They don't want to be. They don't want their little bubbles burst, okay? And I see that in people all the time. You try and give them information that's factual. It doesn't matter if it's 100% factual, right to point. They still just don't want to hear it because it will dispel everything they've ever believed in their life. And some people just can't face that fact that they've been lied to. And they have been. And it's a really hard paradigm to break. Getting back, I wanted to ask you one question here.
I want to add a point to what you just said there. I really do want to add a point there. Is that people, at some point, people pick up on a certain belief, and that belief has to be true no matter what. One of the stories that I tell quite a bit is my father, when I was growing up, was a very angry, violent guy, and he had stupid ideas in his head that you could not convince him were dumb or wrong. One of his things was, turn a light on when you're watching TV in the dark because you're going to get bad eyes. Your grandmother goes through 9 pairs of glasses a year because she watched TV in the dark. I'm thinking, no, grandma's 80 years old. That's why she goes through glasses. That's my thought process. I took a puck in the face, which almost changed the shape of my retina. My father is sitting with me in the optometrist's office, and I asked the guy, the optometrist, sir, will your eyes go bad if you watch movies in the dark? And he says, no, that's an old wives' tale. That's a silly thing. My father beat the crap out of me in the car. Don't you ever humiliate like that. And I got beat for that. So what I'm getting at here is that my old man was no different than the average person that picks up on a particular belief, and that belief has to be true, or they do not feel stable or secure in it. And when they are proven wrong, even by a doctor, they will lash out at the weakest possible target to make themselves feel less stupid. That's really what it boils down to.
Exactly. Yeah, we see that all the time, don't we, Kevin? I was going to ask you about
the
Laura Lynch show then. What did they actually charge you for? Because I listened to the show, so I know what the conversation was about. What did they actually charge you for being on that show with?
What they said was that I was in violation of my conditions for leaving prison. That's what they said. But as it turns out, that cop did not come out. I recorded the conversation. The cop says, it's my opinion that you're in violation of your conditions. And I said, I don't care what your opinion is, Constable. Let's be honest here. Did I break the law? I need a yes or a no. If I've done so, you tell me which one it is, and I'll turn myself in. But she just said, it's my opinion. It's my opinion. I feel that you did this. So that cop is getting sued. She is definitely a far left extremist who hates me. And I'm not going to let this go. Now, the charge is going to get thrown out. It's going to get tossed. We've already spoken to the Crown Attorney on this. There's absolutely no way for a cop's opinion to circumvent the law. This was just a cop that wanted to put me in a cage for a little while. She liked the idea that she was able to talk to me, looking at me through a cage. And whatever she said, I just ignored her. I looked her in the eye and said nothing. I didn't put a mean expression on my face. I didn't answer her questions. I just kept staring at her until it was time for me to leave. I'm not going to give her the satisfaction of getting upset. And I didn't get upset because I was in and I was out of the police station the same day. That's what it boils down to, is that police, there's a few really bad eggs in the Peel Regional Police Force, and they will use whatever they can to make me as miserable as possible. They don't seem to realize that all they do each and every time they arrest me is make me more popular. That's it. Wow. What else can I say on that?
Yeah, no kidding. So could I ask you what kind of conditions they put on you on release out of jail? I mean, what kind of gags do you have on you? Are you allowed to talk about that?
I can tell you now. I wasn't allowed to before, but I can tell you now. First off, I was not allowed to talk to Bonnie Crombie, Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, directly. I was not allowed to talk to Ikra Khalid, the one that came up with Motion M103, I was not allowed to talk about 25 other politicians, and there were 5 subject matters I was not allowed to talk about, including Muslims and Islam. I was not allowed to leave the province of Ontario. And they did that on purpose, knowing that I was running for mayor of Calgary. Let's see here. I was not allowed to go anywhere near a mosque. Now, we got rid of most of those conditions, except now I am allowed to talk about Muslims and Islam, but it has to be positive and happy. It cannot be negative.
Okay.
No, I'm telling you, man, that's on the paperwork. Yep.
Wow.
That's a judge's order. Says that. Yeah.
How far our country has fallen, Kevin. People don't realize the implications of what you just said here. Some people don't realize the implications of what you just said here in the last minute. These restrictions being put on you in a country where free speech is the basis of our society, and they're allowed to do this to you. Well, they're going to be doing this to everybody.
So they tell us. I mean, they've told me a lot of stuff when I was a kid, and none of it's come to fruition. Everything that they've told us is a complete fabrication, which is obviously something I'm quite upset about. But all I can do, I can't change it yet. I have to keep talking to people like yourself and to Rebel Media, to Michael Arana, to everyone else nationwide. I've got to start talking to the international circuit now, including the Americans, big time, and win the mayorship of Calgary so that I can have much more of a voice to get across. They're going to keep trying to silence me. That's not going to ever end.
I know they're trying. Yeah, Kevin, they're not going to stop. They're going to push harder and harder and harder right now because their backs are literally up against the wall now, and they know it. This whole narrative on this COVID crap is going to fall apart on them. I honestly believe that that enough Canadians are going to get to the point where we're just not going to buy this anymore because the numbers don't support anything you guys are saying. I see Canadians waking up, Kevin, but slowly. I do see a shift in society, though, where, a couple, 3 years ago, people called me an absolute nutcase because of things I talked about. Those people seem to be listening a lot more now and are willing to engage in conversations. I never saw that before. So I do see people starting to pay attention. But we really got to step it up, buddy, because these guys are right out of control, period. It's just going to get nuts. Well, I mean, they've seen what they can get away with so far. You think that's bad? What's going to happen, Ken, if they were to unleash a virus in society now that actually had some knockdown power, where we actually saw people, the hospitals overrun, and a major issue in society? Boy, they'd have control like they've never dreamt of before, and society would go right along with it. Go ahead. My thoughts.
Well, you're absolutely correct. Society's got along with the nonsense that we're putting up with now. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely blown away at how readily everybody is willing to give up their rights because of fear. Look, everybody, we live in a society where you no longer have to worry about barbarians at the gate. There are no saber-toothed tigers attacking us. There's no such thing as monsters lurking in the woods deliberately looking to hunt you down, no matter what Hollywood movies have told you. So there's no reason to have these really archaic fears that we're feeling now. In our modern world, I cook this proverb up myself. When you make a decision based on fear, it's 100% wrong, 100% of the time. So stop. What are you all afraid of? That's the part I don't get. When you ask people, what are you afraid of? Well, I don't want to get sick. If you get sick, I would say, there's a 99.9% chance you're going to recover. Well, yeah, I know, but I still don't want to get sick. Well, you're going to get sick. You get sick every year anyway. Most people do.
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't want to get sick this year.
Well, why don't we talk about something that really has some knockdown power, like tuberculosis? You know, you don't hear a word of that in society yet. It kills 1.5 million people in North America every year. But you don't hear a murmur about that, and it's highly contagious. Yeah. Crickets about that. And now, all of a sudden, like I said, the flu numbers aren't talked about at all this year. Flu, I guess, flu's all included in coronavirus now, along with everything else that they can possibly peg it on. And the people that are supporting it, Kevin, you know, the funny thing about this is that the people that are supporting this agenda, they think they're, you know, they're going along to get along. They think they're part of the big plan, that they're invited to the big party, and they got a ticket to the big party, but they don't. Because when poop really does go south, they're going to be stepped on, just like you and me. So I guess I'm speaking to them right now because you're just a player one rung up the ladder from me and Kevin or anybody else in society. And if that doesn't seem to make sense to you, you really got to look at the people at the top because they don't care about anybody but themselves. And all you people that are supporting us right now, you're going to get stomped on just like us. So welcome to the new world. Does that sound crazy, Kevin? Because I don't think it is.
Well, it doesn't sound crazy because it's the reality. And what anybody who's listening that maybe has not heard of me before or is not in the know with what Barry does, I'm asking you really to ask yourself, I'm an adult. What am I afraid of? Am I afraid of monsters in the closet or monsters under the bed? Yeah, am I afraid of the neighborhood bully coming by and taking my tennis ball? What is it that you're really afraid of? And the odds are pretty good. The only thing that you're going to be able to say is, well, I don't want to get sick. I don't want to be called racist. That's the only two things that you're going to be able to come up with. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you get called racist. Who cares? If you know that you're not, then you're just going to have to live with the opinions of others. You should see what they have said about me nationwide. They've called me everything, mm-hmm. and I'm still here, and I'm still smiling. I'm just going to have to live with the opinions of the far left. Who cares? The far left are useless as far as I'm concerned. Their opinions mean absolutely nothing. There's no damage that the far left can do now that they haven't already tried to do. And what I found about the far left is that they are now equally as broke as everybody else. So they're doing far less than they were doing before. Well, there you go. I knew the pendulum was going to begin to swing, but the pendulum can't swing all the way back over to the right where it belongs unless all of you stop this childish fear of the world around you and recognize the fact This is the safest time in our species history. In 250,000 years of evolution, we've never been this safe. What are you afraid of? It's time for you to grow up and start acting like an adult, protect yourself, improve yourself, learn more for yourself, go to the gym, get fit, quit smoking, you know, have 3 beers a week, not 17. Get better, get smarter, and make sure that your politicians are afraid of you. Stop fearing them. They're nobodies. I can tell you, there's not a single politician in this country that can win in a fistfight. Almost none of them can win in a debate, and none of them have any capacity whatsoever to outthink or outfox you if they were outside of their city hall office. Trust me when I say this. I've met hundreds of them. Every politician in this country knows who I am. And when they see me, they run and they hide, including Calgary Mayor Naheed Menchi. He saw me and went and hid in his office until I left the building. Think about it.
Well, you know what you just talked about there, Kevin, is probably one of the best things and most important things that we can do for ourselves right now in this, the chaos around us, is make sure you're taking care of your body. In the last 5 or 6 years, I really kind of switched my diet and I'm paying attention to what's going in my body. The better you take care of your body, the better you feel about yourself, the better your mind seems to work. And I've been listening to you talk for about 4 or 5 years now, I think, Kevin. I've been listening to you talk, and I've noticed a change the way that you're talking. I think that's probably a lot to do with your diet and how you're looking after your body, because I know you've made major changes in how you're looking after your body. It's all relevant, isn't it, buddy? It really is. If your body is toxic and feeling sick and down all the time, you really don't have the energy and the determination, I find, to go after these people that are destroying the world. But you seem to be supercharged, and I know it's because you've done some things to carry your body here in the last 3 or 4 years that you talked about. Well, it's all relevant, right? It is. I drink chaga every day, Kevin. I got to tell you about chaga, okay? Because I tell people about this all the time, Kevin. I haven't gone to a doctor, with the exception of once where I had an infection in my finger. I haven't gone to a doctor in 6 years now. I have a little book called The Encyclopedia of Natural Healing. I go to it every time I get sick. I've gotten more and more and more into the naturals. The more you get into the naturals, Kevin, the better your body feels, the better your mind feels. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in reference to diet, yes, I decided everybody had come down on me in every way imaginable. The cops were coming down on me just for talking. Politicians were coming down on me. Lawsuits were coming down on me. And naturally, it became a lot of pressure on my marriage, and my marriage ended up dissolving as a result of all of this outside pressure. I mean, like sabotaging my cars. I had 2 vehicles sabotaged. They threw eggs at my house. And for those who don't know, when my son died in the hospital, there were photographs of the body, which is standard procedure for hospitals. Someone got a hold of that, put a photograph of my dead son in my mailbox with the words, ha, 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 written in crayon. For God's sake, this is what people do. Now, you know, that got to me because I've seen death in war zones. You know, I've been to 3 war zones in the past.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just hits hard that someone is willing to be so crass and so callous just because my political opinions differ from theirs. It got to me. So I had to make changes. I had to cut some toxic people out of my life, and I had to start going to the gym 5 days a week, which I still do now. You know, and at age 49, I'll be 50 shortly, I'm leg pressing 900 pounds and I'm bench pressing 240. Yeah, you know what? I am feeling pretty damn good because I'm beating my body up the right way and I'm feeding it the right amounts of food after the beat-up sessions. When I heal the next day, I feel fantastic. So I'm asking all of you to consider the same thing. Not necessarily doing what I do because my workouts are pretty extreme, but get out and exercise. Walk 3 or 4 Ks a day. It doesn't take long. A 10K walk is only 1 hour and 45 minutes if you keep a good pace. A 5K walk is exactly 55 minutes if you keep a good pace. Take an ebook with you. While you're building your body up, expand your mind. It doesn't matter what book it is. Just take an ebook with you, or a digital book, an audio book, I meant to say. Throw it in your phone. Take some headphones. Go and have some alone time learning something new while you exercise. And then do what Barry says. Jog is amazing. You know, but cutting out carbohydrates if you're not exercising all that much is a good idea. White sugar, pitch it. You know, you got to get rid of the bad things. That's all.
Yeah,
and
all
you'll
the
feel better.
Foods.
You'll think better the whole bit. Oh, yes. Yeah, so one more thing. Ignore the Canada Food Guide. About what, 4 slices of bread a day? Are you kidding? No way.
Are you kidding? I've actually, you know what? I've just about got bread right out of my diet, guys. And I'll tell you, that's one of the biggest things you could do. Get into wild rice and really start paying attention to what you're putting into your body, because there's so much toxic food out there. I've got a list here at home that I take to the grocery store with me, Kevin. It still gives me foods that aren't genetically modified. And I can still buy foods that aren't genetically modified. I don't buy brand labels anymore because most of them are GMOs, but you can avoid them. And the more you avoid them, the better your body feels. And I know this is a little off subject, but it's not, because the more your body, we're in times right now where you're going to need strength. You're going to need intestinal fortitude. Your brain's going to have to be working in all its cylinders. And detoxifying your body and changing your diet and eating good food will really make a difference in your life. And we'll leave it at that, because this isn't a health show, but it's all relevant to what we're talking about today, Kevin.
Well, it is. And I wanted to agree with what you're saying there, because you're correct. And I would ask everyone to read more books. I'd ask everyone to exercise and ask everybody to stop fearing the boogeyman that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
I mean, how many of you, let's think about this. How many of you have ever come across a bylaw officer in your lives? How many of you have ever had a security guard demand to see your identification or assault you or beat you up? I bet the answer is zero for almost all of you out there. And let's really look at things properly. The city of Mississauga right now, 1 million people, has 21 bylaw officers in it. That's all. And they're working 7 at a time on a 24-hour shift, broken into 3 8-hour shifts. You're not going to come across these people. And when you do, you can tell them to back up and leave you alone. That's it. Back up, leave me alone. I'm afraid for my life, and run if you have to. You've got the right to remain silent. That does not mean you're under arrest. It simply means you've got the right to not answer anybody's questions, period. Exercise your right to remain silent and tell bylaw officers, if you come across one, that I do not wish to have this conversation. Walk away. You don't have to talk to them. You don't have to answer the phone. You don't have to answer your front door. You don't have to do any of that. Period. So what are you afraid of? Please ask yourselves that. Analyze it. And then maybe, you know what, get back to me at some point in the future. Maybe what you and I should do, Barry, in the future is a call-in show where people can maybe call in and tell us why they're afraid of things like bylaw officers and bylaws and the potential to get a fine that you know you can beat in court the very next day.
Why are you afraid? Yeah, that would be fun, because you're right. The only virus we have in society right now is the fear virus. And they really kind of got they got the result. You know, they unleashed this on society, Kevin, and they got the result they wanted. They wanted to see what people would do when they put out something there that is an absolute nothing burger. If you look at the numbers, you listen to the doctors talk about this virus and how what we talked about early in the show, how it can't be identified and blah, 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 all this other stuff. Well, all they've done is taken the media, taken a fear virus and thrown it out there, and they got the response from society they wanted. They wanted to find out who was going to conform to the demands they make on them without questioning it. And now they've got them all on a list, Kevin. And they're not going to stop. Like I said, these guys will not stop. We've given them a new level of power that they've never experienced before. They're drunk with power right now. And they aren't, like I said, they're not going to stop. We got to stop this, or it's just going to go right out of hand. I see that coming very shortly.
Well, let me tell you what I think is going to happen here. I mean, you always have to factor this in. And I've always used this as an example. You're going to catch the wrong guy who's got the wrong set of skills at the wrong time in his life, and you're going to say the wrong thing to him on that day. Imagine a guy who's a black belt in 3 martial arts and an expert in knives and an expert in 5 different firearms. He's recently divorced. His brother was the one sleeping with his wife behind his back. His brother and his ex-wife took his house and emptied his bank account. He's living in a car. Yeah, he's got nothing to his name, not even a toothbrush. And then you decide that you're going to be the one to tell him that he has to wear a mask and he has to comply with your wishes. That's the guy who's going to snap. He's going to turn your head backwards. He's going to do it in front of a bunch of witnesses and make some kind of ill-fated speech that's going to go viral in a video. The whole world's going to hear it, and everyone else is going to start going out there breaking the necks of all these crazy bylaw officers and whatnot. That is how it starts. You cannot push people too far. And remember I told you about my old man. Let me give you the prime example here. And this is in a book that I'm putting out next year, so I don't mind telling you about it now, Barry. My old man, like I mentioned, was a very violent guy. He beat the crap out of my brother and I all the time, period. He could not control his anger. And one day, he just came to my room. He was mad about something. I forget what it was. He slaps me in the side of the head with his hand. And I turned to him with this look of hatred on my face, and he hit me again because he was afraid. I didn't realize it was fear until he went downstairs and he called my mother at work saying, he looked at me with this evil look on his face. What's the matter with him? Why won't he do what he's told? Thinking, wow, that's fear. The next night, I went downstairs with a can of gasoline and a road flare. And I poured gas on the floor in the basement. It was a new carpet they got. And I lit the road flare and I told him, you touch me again, I will burn you alive in your sleep. You understand? And my mother was crying. I said, no, Ma, you let him do this for years. You're as guilty as he is. And that's when I became the alpha male in the room. I'm not going to sit here, Barry, and tell you that I was proud of that. I'm telling you I did that because it was necessary. Mm-hmm. I had had enough. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, you know what? That's not who I am. I don't like that side of me. So I moved out of my parents' place a couple of weeks later, and I stayed out for 6 years. I went back for 6 months, and then I went down to the United States of America for a couple of years, 4 years, in fact, after that. What I'm getting at here is you've got to be careful how far you push people, because when they come back, it's going to be horrible. And we could have very easily 100,000 people blowing their stacks and doing egregious things, to which they will be within their rights to do so, to which I will have no sympathy for the politicians that get hurt. But it's not the society that I want. I did not want to be in a household where it was necessary to pour gasoline on the floor. That's not what I wanted in my lifetime. It's what I was handed, and I dealt with it. Many other people are going to begin dealing with this less intelligently than I did by moving out. They're just going to go straight to violence. I don't want that, but that's where it's going.
Well, you know, I guess I'm lucky, Kevin, that my dad never physically beat us. But, you know, there's an old saying that the tongue is mightier than the sword. And my dad's mouth, I believe, did just as much damage to my brothers and sisters as violently hitting us. And it doesn't matter what kind of assault you unleash on a child. A verbal assault, folks, is just as damaging as a physical assault. So please be careful how you deal with your children, because it'll resonate with him for the rest of
it. Yeah, absolutely.
It does.
Absolutely. And
my dad used to say to me, little boys are meant to be seen and not heard, Barry. And I'm going, what?
Oh, yours too, huh?
Yeah, that was his favorite. saying. Little boys are meant to be seen and not heard. Well, I got lots to say, Dad, but you just put a muzzle on me all the time. And that's what I was, that's how we were treated growing up. And I look back at it now and I go, well, you know, shame on you, but I'm not going to hold that against you now. I've moved forward and put that behind me. But we all go through different forms of abuse as children. More people I talk to realize that, you know, they've been through similar instances. Their dads and moms have either physically or verbally abused them. We got to break that chain, guys. We really do. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, you're not wrong to say that. I mean, it's my old man was very verbally abusive as well. And it did get me down for a while. And then I guess I'm one of the lucky ones who just stopped caring. I stopped caring about it because I realized that once I was away from him and working, I would go to school and then go straight to work. I had 3 part-time jobs when I was 15. And I liked being around other adults who were interested in making money and performing their jobs as opposed to barking, screaming, and yelling. I'm thinking, wow, okay, so my old man is unique in this. You know, the outside world doesn't behave this way, and we'd like to see more of the outside world behaving politely. But again, the point I want to make here is that we're pushing everyone to being broke and getting kicked out of their houses, out of jobs, out of money. They're going to be popping, man. They're going to start to get angry, and they're going to start assaulting people, and that's just the way that it is. Look, I've even had to cut a couple of friends out of my life because in this horrible economy that we have, I have this former best friend of mine that tried to do 2 things. Number one was steal my wife when I was still married and then convince her to put him on title on the house that she had had her name on, specifically so that he could put his name on that, mortgage his half of it and then pay off his debts because his wife is putting pressure on him to get their house paid off. Like, this is a friend of mine of 25 years.
Oh, really, man. Stakes in the grass, man.
When I was at my lowest point, he saw an opportunity to steal what I had worked for. So he's done. I told him flat out, I pissed on ever seeing you again. We're done.
Sad to hear that, Kevin. It really is.
Yeah. Well, a society like this pushes brother on brother and friend on friend. And I'm not going to dwell on this. I don't need sympathy. I don't want anything other than just to recognize the fact that when a society begins to crumble, your loyal friends are not so loyal anymore. So you've got to be very, very selective who you give information to.
Amen.
Because they will try and use it against you.
We're down to the last couple minutes here, Kevin. So I'm going to let you share for a minute here where people can find you, your media platforms where people can hear you talk. And I'm going to have to let you go. The hour went very quickly, my friend.
No problem. Oh, yeah, it went very fast. Okay, listen, everyone. I've got a book out right now. It's called Lacrosse is Dead, where I expose corruption in youth sports, specifically the Canadian and Ontario Lacrosse Associations. I wrote it. It's a four-year investigative piece. So there's a lot of damning information in there, but also I wrote it as if I was doing a stand-up comedy routine. So I guarantee you that for $20 flat out, I can send you over the audio book or the digital book, and you're going to get 12 big laughs out of this thing. It's highly entertaining stuff. You can find that, all of my social media links, and everything that you need to know to get a hold of me at my website, which is KevinJ.Johnston.ca. That's Kevin J. Johnston, JOHNSTON.ca. You can donate to my mayor run. You can buy my book and have a good time. And remember that masks are BS. That's my next book. It's available this week, so you can pre-buy your copy now. I've had such a great time writing these books because I love educating people. And Barry, thank you so much for letting me talk to your audience. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, Kevin, I love having you in, brother. And folks, I endorse what Kevin's doing. So please, if you can support him by going out and purchasing anything off his website, please do that. Because there isn't too many people in my world today that have the testicles the size of Kevin Johnston. So that's how I'm going to say it. Thanks for coming in today, Kevin. Love having you in. And I'll have you back here real soon, bud. Have a great day.
Looking forward to the next one. Thanks a million, man. Take care.
Okay. We'll be back, folks, in about 3-4 minutes. And originally, Roger Rinder was on my schedule today, but he can't make it. So Doug Force is going to join me, and we're going to have a little chat. Back in 3 or 4.
listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com. Seeking solutions.
Welcome back, second hour, folks, and thanks again to Kevin Johnson for coming in. I really enjoyed that conversation, and I'll get him back in here real soon. Second hour today, originally I had Roger Landry scheduled to come in, but because of the time change, Roger's not going to be able to join me today, and that's too bad because he was going to really kind of expose some information on Hunter Biden, but I think my next guest could do that, but we're not going to talk about that, actually. We decided that we're going to talk about cannabis, something that really gets my heart going and just fills me, kind of literally fills me with hope for the human being and the human race and the future of our planet. Because I've said this many times on my show, and I could never make a more true statement in my life, that if we as a society and as a world embraced industrial and medical cannabis right now, widespread, all through our society and every application of everything that we're doing in life, we might have a chance to save this planet. But if we continue to go down the road we're going down right now, I don't believe there will be life on this planet in the very near future. I'm not going to say a date, but realistically, I look at what's going on with our species, with our biosphere, with the soil conditions, with the disappearance of animals worldwide. The numbers are absolutely staggering. You never hear this kind of stuff talked about on mainstream, but it all comes back to the use of cannabis and what we can do to stem everything we see going wrong with our planet today. And Doug Force has joined me, and I know when we get talking about this subject, I love talking with Doug about it, because Doug seems to have a real good history background on cannabis, probably a little better than mine. So it's kind of good to get somebody in here that really knows a lot about it, some of the things he's tried to do here in the last, 10, 15 years of your life, Doug, in South America and Africa. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that today. Thanks for coming in and covering for Roger. Always good to have you on, my friend.
It's always nice to be here, Barry, and thank you for having me yet again. Appreciate it, and I love your audience. They're great people and good listeners. It's nice to have an audience like you have here.
Well, I appreciate my audience, that's for sure. So,
but yeah, I had a, it's actually been, oh my goodness, over 20 years now. I used to have a foundation. I had to close it down about 10 years ago, but it was called the Leaf Foundation, LEAF Foundation. And basically what we did is we came up with a plan to replant the rainforests, it was interesting that we had to. What we did is we chose three plants that would bring in income stream, because when you go to reforest the rainforest, it has to be done in stages, and it takes 75 years to actually get various stages growing. And when you're looking at like a million acres of deforestation in, for example, the Amazon, you're going to take, and you're not going to do a million acres all at once. You have to break it down. And so you have to plant your heavy growth in first, et cetera, et cetera. But the number one problem that we find, especially in tropical rainforests, is that there's only 18 inches of topsoil. And once the once it's been deforested, that topsoil goes away very quickly. So in order to get new topsoil brought in, the number one plant that you would bring in and grow four or five cycles is hemp or cannabis. Why? Because, well, Derek, you know why. First and foremost, its root system doesn't, it's not a deep root system, but it's a wide root system. So it anchors soil. And that's really important when you're working with very little topsoil or no topsoil, because cannabis will grow, or hemp will grow, in sandy soil. Cannabis hemp does not need to have good soil, but what it leaves behind is great soil. And so once you run a few crops through, you can then start bringing in alternative plants and start your anchor foliage for your rainforests. And then you move on and move on. And and you continue to do this, because you don't do a million acres all at once. You have to break it down, and you have to plan for it. We also used other plants as well that were part of this. The Paulownia tree was another one that we would use. It was a fast-growing hardwood. And what was interesting about the Paulownia tree is fireproof. If you built a house out of Paulownia tree, you couldn't burn it down. It will not burn. The other reason that we chose Paulownia trees is because some of the indigenous people would just cut down trees for firewood. And so we would have these Paulownia trees as a break. So we would have several tens of acres of Paulownia trees as a break into the rainforest area. And so the people, if they decided they wanted to cut down the trees and burn them, good luck. It was you couldn't put a nail into a Paulownia tree. It was that hard, and it was an amazing tree, because it took 7 years to 10 years to grow to its full length of about 70 feet.
It's almost like a steel, the wood coming off that tree.
Well, if you ever
really super hard.
If you ever go to Japan and you go to the temples that they build, that there are 3-4 story temples that these guys built, the center pole is a Paulownia tree.
Right. I know they do a lot of carvings that come out of that part of the country, out of that tree, and I believe it's the same as an ironwood, what they call ironwood, and they do a lot of tourist stuff with that, and it's like steel, Doug.
Yeah. Well, and a third plant we did, for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a shrub, and what we would do is we would plant these shrubs as fencing, and you could fence off the growing areas where you grew your cannabis or your hemp, and you could fence off if you had animals and livestock, you could fence them in with this plant. Now, why? Because this plant actually had these berries that then turned into nuts that stunk. They were absolutely horrifically smelling and tasting extremely bad. Hmm. What was interesting about that, you harvest these nuts and you run them through a press, you have biodiesel. You take the mash from that and you compost it, and now you can put that into your soil. It's wonderful for the soil growth. So right. Now you've got 3 different plants that you're using, and all these plants bring income. So if you're going to have people here, because they got to live there for 75 years, so you have to generate some income for them to be there. And so there's a lot of heavy equipment usually that you're bringing in there, and all the generators and so forth are diesel, and if you're running it on biodiesel, so your cost for your diesel is very small. With the hemp and the seeds from the hemp, they are also crushed and then composted, and the oils from that are used as biodiesel. So you're really creating a self-contained area where you're actually going to bring back the rainforest to its original form by keeping people there gainfully employed for 75 years. So it's generational. And the completed project is then a restored rainforest. It's very interesting.
But that was like 10 years ago, you said?
Yeah, I had to get out of it about 10 years ago when this whole collapse happened in 2008. We were able to kind of limp along for another 2 years. But then after a couple of years, we just got to shut it down. There was no more funding coming in. The big corporations were under the gun. They were carrying a lot of debt and so forth. They didn't have a lot of free money to toss around. And so regrettably we had to shut down operations.
There's always a chance to go again in the future because things are changing.
Well, exactly. And I'm not too worried about it myself at this time, because it's all there. The blueprints to roll this out is all there. And it can be done in not just in tropical, but subtropical. And up here in Canada, we can do the same thing up here with these cash crops. And the one cash crop that would grow three times here in Canada over a season is hemp.
Yep.
And how amazing is that?
And it's legal. There's nothing, and there's also a market for it now, Doug. That, you know, there's companies that are building products now out of industrial, out of cannabis, and the market for industrial hemp is growing in Canada as we speak. And boy, I'll tell you, if we could really start getting some of the builders and major builders in Canada on board with using hemp, the offshoot of it, I sit and I think about it, Doug, and I go, wow, if the demand grows, then there's going to be fields and fields of industrial hemp growing in Canada. And those fields are going to be so fertile that after growing hemp on them for a couple of years, we switch to conventional crops. And then you start doing some studies into how many nutrients are going to be in those crops as compared to a normal crop grown beside it on soil that hasn't had hemp growing on it. And I've looked at some of these studies, and it just blows my mind. We can also detoxify our soil. We know that they've been spraying chemicals in our sky. It's not a secret that they've been spraying beryllium and strontium and mercury and potassium iodide and all these neat little chemicals in our sky for years to deflect the sun's heat under the guise of global warming, geoengineering crap. But anyways, we know they've been doing that, Doug, and that's soil, that our soils are going to have those contaminants in them. So if we grew industrial hemp all over the planet, we take all those contaminants out of the soil, because industrial hemp has an incredible ability to take just about any kind of isotope, any kind of nuclear isotope or contaminant or oil-based isotope. It's been proven to remove. So, wow. Should we be using it now? Yes, we should. Big time.
But poor old Bill Gates would get very upset with you. He's bound and determined. As a eugenicist, as a university dropout, he has no degree in anything other than being brought up with a father who was part of Planned Parenthood and a mother who was who probably should have used Planned Parenthood before he was born. It would probably be a much better world without him in it.
Yeah, he's a pretty evil man, Doug.
But, you know, and you're going to take a vaccine from a eugenicist. I wonder how that's going to work out for you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're doing this on purpose, and they know what they're doing, and the problem is that when you try to clean up the mess that they put in there, they have all the money, right? Or at least for now they do, as the fiat currency system is still with us. But they have the money, and behind that money is the power, and so it's very difficult to roll something like this out. I mean, We have the arboreal forests here in Ontario, and they cut them down for two things: paper towels and toilet paper. That's it.
What a shame.
And if you do hemp is great fiber. It makes beautiful paper. It makes great paper towels. It makes great toilet paper, and it's cheap. It's cheaper to grow, cheaper to harvest, cheaper to produce than it is to cut down the arboreal forests.
Right. Now, use a third of the water.
I'm sorry?
Use a third of the water to produce hemp fiber as you do conventional fiber. Go ahead.
No, and so the here in Ontario, they have tobacco farming that's now slowly being phased out. Okay. And the tobacco farming areas are all very sandy soils. Okay. And so what a perfect opportunity to roll hemp into those areas. And clean up that land and make it more viable for other crops. Like you say, you plant hemp, but at the same time, you now have hemp that you can create fiber from, paper, toilet paper, and literally tens of thousands of acres. So why are we?
Yeah, go ahead. And then we could feed it to our animals too, Doug.
Yeah.
Now, there is one of the biggest points that you can make about it right now, and I just really got onto that a couple of years ago. What would happen to our livestock if we were feeding them hemp, natural hemp? What kind of concentrations of CBLs and CBDs and nutrition would be in those animals if we were to eat them, man? It would blow your mind, some of the things I'm reading. Go ahead.
Well, you wouldn't have to use any antibiotics on them.
And steroids, growth hormones, all that.
Steroids, yep, or anything like that. And you'd have a whole bunch of happy cows and happy sheep and happy pigs.
Yes, because their bodies feel great. They're not aching. They're not feeling sick. They don't know what's making them sick, but they know they're not feeling right. Go ahead.
Yeah, but can you imagine dairy farmers? Because one of the big things with the dairy farmers is that they have the udders are covered in pus and scabs and so forth from them being milked too much and too often and not being... but they got to shoot antibiotics in. That antibiotics goes into the milk. And we now have strains of Staphylococca and other kinds of bacteria. Did you know that there's a new type of pneumonia out? It's been around for about 2, maybe 3 years. They discovered it about 2, 3 years ago. It's called fast pneumonia. And what happens is, it doesn't matter whether you're 6 years old or 60 years old or any age in between, it's the same all the way through. What happens is that that fast pneumonia comes into people with a compromised immune system, and it usually takes about 7 to 10 days to kill you. And antibiotics do not work against it. They just sit there and wait to see what happens to you. There's nothing they can do with antibiotics that will help you, but 7 to 10 days, and that's it. And now we're having a spike in fast pneumonia due to this mask-wearing stuff that we've been going on with. And people here in Toronto are being checked into the hospital and dying, but they'd call it COVID-19 deaths.
Wow. Well, I've heard, that's brought to my attention, actually, and I think it's something we're really going to have to keep our eye on, Doug, because it's that kind of a death rate, 7 to 10 days. If that ever got out to society, boy, we'd really give them a weapon to use against us, wouldn't we?
Well, the fast pneumonia is very particular. It only goes into people with a compromised immune system. If your immune system is good, by the way, Bill Gates lied to us on March the 1st, 2020, 7.8 billion people did not lose their immune system. We all have immune systems. All we have to do is maintain our immune system by eating properly, getting good exercise, taking your proper supplements, take your vitamin C, your vitamin D, et cetera, especially if you're over the age of 55, get your supplements going. These kinds of things will give you a good, strong immune system. You don't have to worry about it. But if you're compromised immune system, like I said, it doesn't matter whether you're 3 years old or 60 years old. If your immune system has been compromised, fast pneumonia will kill you. And so there's nothing they can do with it.
What would compromise? What would be something that would compromise people's immune system to make them susceptible to this? Are we talking about a major respiratory illness at one point, or just a weak immune system in general because of their diet? What do you mean?
Yeah, it could be any of those. The number one thing that they're finding now is that people that wear masks all the time, and especially the blue masks that you just keep over your face and they don't change them every 20 minutes as they should. Mm-hmm. And then these things start breeding themselves. Plus, you're giving yourself low oxygen. As soon as you give yourself low oxygen, it triggers your immune system because all the other bacteria and microbes in your body are starting to come alive. Because most viruses live in an abiotic world, which means oxygen free. So when you start dropping the oxygen content in your body, the other viruses are starting to come alive, and your immune system is now in hypersensitivity, and it's basically compromised. So that when a bacteria comes in, like an pneumonia bacteria, it just rips through your body like nobody's business because your immune system is gone crazy with all these other viruses that it's trying to compete against. Mm. And so, yeah, that's the number one thing that's happening now. This social distancing and not being close to anybody anymore. What they've tried to do here, and they've done it for the vaccine companies, this social distancing, wash your hands
sanitizer.
Yeah.
With the ethyl alcohol in it, that stuff.
Yeah, that's the stuff. All of that compromises your immune system. All of this, and what they're trying to do is prevent herd immunity. In other words, if we get herd immunity, the virus that they released into society suddenly is no longer there anymore, and what's the point of having a vaccine? The whole idea of lockdowns and social distancing and masking is all to stop herd immunity. It's to stop your immune system from doing its job. Mm-hmm. The vaccine companies want you to believe that you don't have an immune system, and they're going to prove it to you by social distance, mask wearing, hand sanitizers, lockdowns, all these things. And then they could come in with the vaccines. And Bill Gates, he's all about the whole vaccine business. And Bill Gates is built on the Microsoft operating system. So you need an update every month or every week or every day or every second day. That's what he wants to do with the vaccines. And at the end of the day, if we have hemp and cannabis and we feed that to the animals that we eat, our immune systems will become bulletproof, as will theirs.
Absolutely. Yep.
And
absolutely.
That scares these eugenicists to no end. And it does.
They don't want us healthy.
Well, and they want to depopulate the planet because they say, "Well, we're going to have 12 billion people on this planet in no time." The problem is that they're wrong. The growth of mankind doesn't grow exponentially. In poor countries, the reason they have so many children is because of the survival rate of the children. So they have lots of kids to make sure that they survive, or at least some survive, pass the gene along. But in places like North America, which is high living standards, et cetera, high birth rate standards, the child population here is very small. As a matter of fact, it's right now declining here in Europe, and that's why they open the doors to immigration, so that they can get bigger populations going on in here, and because the population that we have, because we're wealthy, we don't have as many kids, one, maybe two kids, we're not getting married, a lot of divorces, that kind of thing. So they're lying about the population going to 12 billion. Actually, we're seeing 7.8 billion today, and the expected population is to drop for next year, about 7.6 billion, and it continue to drop until 2050, where we'll be at around about 5.8 to 6 billion people. So that's quite a huge drop over the next 20 to 30 years, rather than going the other way around. And this is why they want to have this socialism, and they don't want to make everybody lift everybody out of poverty. They want to push everybody into poverty, and hence cause the eugenics programs to take effect, and then them at the top. They want 500 million slaves for themselves. So they want to wipe out 7.3 billion people on this planet. The only way they can do that is to push everybody into poverty. Why into poverty? Because your diet is now compromised. When you have your compromised diet, what happens to you? Your immune system is compromised.
Well, of course, you can be completely subservient to the government. So whatever the government says, you're going to have to go along or you're not going to be able to function in society. We're seeing the push for the RFID chip, Doug. That's coming real soon. We see the push for cashless society because it'll make it possible to do what they're going to do. We see all these pieces falling in place right now in front of our face, buddy, don't we?
Yeah, but here's the thing. We have the plant with hemp cannabis. That changes the whole world. And it changes people because it, instead of pushing them down into poverty, it lifts them out of poverty and into a position where they're going to be happy, they're going to enjoy, they're going to have one kid or two kids rather than 12 kids because they know they don't have to, that their children will survive and take on and pass the genome along as they grow into. And this is the other thing with this whole cultural Marxism about feminism. To break up the family unit so that people don't breed LGBTQ. Once again, break up the family unit and stop men from copulating with women to have children. Have men copulate with men, women copulate with women. No children are produced.
Exactly. You break the family unit, Doug, you break that society. And that's exactly what's happening. And we could talk for hours on all the different attacks on family. Just insane from health to morals to full spectrum. It all focuses on the destruction of the family unit because that is the strength of our society. So you take that away and you can look at history, any time in history where the family has been destroyed in a society, that society has fallen. And we're just falling right down the same track. Read the Communist Manifesto, Doug. That's one book that I have read. And it really explained a lot of things to me at one point in my life. I read that about 5 years ago. And I also read Rules for Radicals by Sal Zelinsky. I suggest people read them both because it really will cross the T's and dot the I's to exactly what's going on today.
Another one that's a very interesting read are is The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Mm. I haven't read that, but I've heard. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's an interesting read, and it kind of you read that and you go, oh my God, this is happening right now, and I go, oh no kidding. Anyways, I don't want to get into that on this show, but we're coming back to hemp and cannabis, and I use the difference between hemp, which has no THC or basically very little THC, and cannabis, which does have the THC and high CBDs.
Right.
So one is medicinal, and the other is for fibers, is for you could do biodiesel off the seeds of this stuff. You can make cloth for clothing, and cloth for clothing lasts for years and years and years, much better than cotton. Cotton is very what you call water. Cotton needs a lot of water, whereas hemp does not.
Also leaves a chemical trace after hemp doesn't. There's 50,000 different uses that we could employ right now in society with the hemp plant that we're currently using chemicals and other mechanisms to produce these products. That's the bottom line. Anything we're making right now in the world, we can replace with hemp.
Well, biodegradable plastics come out of hemp now.
Exactly.
Very successful with that.
Right, becomes part of the earth. What is it? 6 months after it's made, I think. I was reading one company in Germany. Apparently, after 6 months, it just kind of breaks down, becomes part of the earth again. Well,
yeah.
Boy, that would solve a lot of problems, wouldn't it, Doug? When we look at the amount of plastic in the ocean right now, it's staggering.
Well, and there are people out there that have actually. There's a gentleman that created a methodology of pulling even microplastics out of the oceans. He developed it over a number of years. And they're actually deployed. I think he's got two ships now that are deployed out there doing this. They need a fleet of probably 50 ships to do it correctly. For the amount of plastic they're picking up. And the beautiful part of that is that it breaks it right back down into its component parts, and then it can be recycled.
Right. Well,
which is amazing.
More power to them. Plastic is a major problem. It's not. I don't believe it's the biggest problem, but it's a major problem we have. I maintain that what's going on with our friends over in Japan right now is going to be the biggest fear that we have in the next few years when we really start seeing some of the effects of Fukushima on our ocean, Doug. A lot of that information isn't coming forward, but I do listen to a lot of people that are talking about it. I try and get to the bottom of some of the information to make sure it's correct. But I maintain kind of if 50% of what I'm hearing right now is true, then we are really in a pile of problems right now as far as the ocean goes.
Well, here's a quick little funny Canadian story for you. So here in Canada, we had a company called CANDU. CANDU makes nuclear reactors. They had a sub-corporation that for many years was just R&D. All they did was R&D. And this little R&D company over the years have created, I think it's called a breeder reactor.
Yes, I've read about them. Yep,
and a breeder reactor takes the waste products from places like Fukushima and completely gone. It's gone. Yep. There is no waste coming out of there.
And
to zero.
Yep.
Now, CANDU was a public-private company. So the government, Canadian government, owned it, and then part of the company was owned by the private sector. And this R&D company that was set up for R&D to create the breeder reactor, because CANDU was getting a lot of pressure and so forth, and they were starting to go bankrupt, so they had to start selling off bits and pieces of themselves. And this little breeder reactor company was sold off at auction. And what's really weird about this auction was there was only one bidder. Can you want to take a guess as to who won the contract or who won that company?
Let me think. Maybe SNC-Lavalin?
Yay!
Do I get a prize? I got a prize.
Do you know what they paid for it?
I heard this too, Doug. Tell them. It'll blow your mind. Go ahead. I know. You go ahead and tell them.
$15 million is what they paid.
Imagine that. That's kind of technology.
Multi-hundred billion dollars. They got contracts on the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative, set up across Eurasia. I believe they have 20 they're building now, with another 30 on the books to come over the next 10 years, and another possible 150 over the next 30 years. These things are small. You could put them in your small town. You can build them big or small. It doesn't matter. They do exactly the same thing. They take waste from old nuclear waste, and they take it and they clean it all up. It becomes zero emissions. It's amazing.
We need to bring that hard right now, Doug, You know, that's a great thing going forward. And I applaud what they're doing. I've looked into it. The fact that SNC-Lavalin got their fingers in there, I despise that. But besides that fact, what they're doing with these reactors is it's a godsend. But the problem is that we have a lot of stuff already that needs to be cleaned up immediately. The amount of barrels of really, really contaminated waste that were dumped in the Atlantic Ocean in the 70s. Well, now they're going down there and they're testing around these barrels and they're starting to leak. Well, boy, I'll tell you, if we have major leaks, the amount of wastage that was dumped in the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, folks, we're talking about killing the bottom of the ocean. And the same thing is happening with the Pacific Ocean right now. Like I said, Doug, it's really, I follow a lot of people that talk about it, and it's really hard because there is a lot of disinformation out there. But really, some of the stuff that's been brought to my attention, Dr. Helen Kellicott just did another video on the Pacific Ocean, the health. I urge you to go listen to what she's saying. Our oceans are in a lot of trouble. And, of course, that's the source of life on this planet. So going forward, our biggest cry would be to eliminate the effects of nuclear waste on our planet. And these CANDU reactors are an answer. But we still have a lot of stuff out there that needs to be cleaned up. The amount of plutonium that's sitting in Hanford right now, one major, and you know, Hanford, folks, sits close to a major fault line. And if they had an event anywhere near Hanford that was to release the amount of plutonium that's stored in that place, well, we can kiss everybody goodbye. So we need to eliminate those threats to our future. We definitely do. Nuclear power is suicide.
And old nuclear power, the breeder reactors are not suicide. The breeder reactors are the new wave of nuclear power because they take the waste product. We can go to the bottom of the Pacific Ocean and bring these barrels up, bring them into these breeder reactors and get rid of this stuff once and for all. Do you know that there's in the United States, they have these people say, well, they're drilling holes into the side of mountains and they're making these wonderful, you know, underground bunkers for the people to go hide in. Well, that's not true. What they're actually doing is, yes, they're drilling holes in the sides of mountains, and they're putting in nuclear waste.
Right.
They're going to all these other sites where they buried the stuff and digging it up and repackaging it and bringing it into these sites in mountains because they're starting to get the breakdowns and the leaching. But they've got, like, I think they were saying that for these breeder, if they were to deploy 200 breeder reactors across the planet, we would have over 1,000 years worth of waste that would run these breeder reactors. And that's only 200. Could you imagine 1,000 of these things? And it would get rid of this waste and the planet would become very well.
Yeah, I know. I've read into it, Doug, and I applaud what they're doing. The only problem is I don't think we have that time frame to eliminate the threat of nuclear, especially what we see right now going on seismically around the world. We do see a major increase in seismic activity. That's not deniable.
Yeah, the Ring of Fire.
And you know, the thing is, one of the studies I did 4 or 5 years ago is I was sitting at my buddy's computer and he has a printer and we had transparent paper and we punched in all the known fault lines on the planet Earth today. And then we punched in every active nuclear power plant functioning on the planet Earth today. And boy, when you lay them on top of each other, and I challenge people to do this, Doug, you fall off your chair. I fell off my chair. I went, wait a second, hold it. They're all laying right on top of the fault line. What is going on here? Why would they even think about building a nuclear power plant close to a fault line that's going to create an 8.1 or an 8.2 or a 9 magnitude earthquake in the future? We're going to see meltdowns, folks. It's like you can't build nuclear power plants on the Earth and tell the Earth, okay, Earth, your plates, they stopped today. The plates, no more movement in the plates. That millions of miles of molten lava in the center of our planet, that can't be there anymore. Everything has got to stop because we have put nuclear power plants here now and that's it. You guys are finished. It doesn't work that way, folks. These earthquake zones in the future are going to create massive earthquakes. And boy, I'll tell you, you want to see chaos in society, Doug. Get 3 or 4 major meltdowns going on in the United States of America at the same time, and you'd hear people's voices screaming at the top of their lungs to get rid of nuclear power. But by then, folks, it's going to be too late. And that event could happen tomorrow, Doug. Nuclear, to me, is suicide. It's shooting yourself in the foot.
Here's the funny thing. So people, first of all, let's go back. You know why the Ring of Fire is doing what it's doing right now? The Ring of Fire goes around the Pacific, by the way, for those listening.
Right.
It starts down in the Philippines and ends down in Chile. and as the ARC comes into North America. So do you know why it's doing what it's doing?
Well, I have a couple different theories, okay, Doug. I've been following Dutch Sense. I follow a few other people that have theories, and there's lots of different theories right now increased activity in our heavens, solar and magnetic effects on the Earth. One person that really I kind of listen to a lot, won't say their name, but kind of figures that the sea of molten lava that's below the plates on our planet right now is kind of in a wobble. We're seeing some very, very big earthquakes happen, and they seem to be on the increase right now. So, okay.
So
lots of your theories. What do you think? I'll listen to your theory.
Well, actually, it's not a theory. This is based on scientific fact because it's happened every time. Every time this particular event happens, the Earth tectonic plates start to move, et cetera, et cetera. You start getting more volcanic action, and so forth. And it's called a solar minimum. It's when the sun cools, hence no global warming. And we're into, I believe we're already into, what is it, about 18 years of a 60-year solar minimum. And so we're going to see this activity going on. But here's the other side of this coin. So we talk about earthquakes. And everybody says, you know, oil, fossil fuels. Well, fossil fuels was an idea made up by Rockefeller in 1892 at a meeting in Switzerland because they wanted to make sure that nobody found out that oil was abiotic. In other words, that it would run out. But the world continues to make oil on an ongoing basis, and that's why they call it abiotic. And why would the Earth continue to make oil? What is oil? Oh, oil is a lubricant. Oh, and where do we find most of the oil deposits when we go exploring for oil? Oh, along fault lines. Oh, well, do you think maybe the Earth is creating the oil for the fault lines to stop the friction of rock on rock and stop earthquakes? Because look what happened in California. Where did they drill out all the oil from in California? All across the San Andreas Fault.
Exactly.
Why do they have the worst earthquakes? The same thing over in the Pacific. When you go into the Pacific and you go to the Philippines, where are they drilling and taking the oil from? They're taking the oil off the fault lines all the way down in New Guinea and so forth. That's why you're having this volcanic activity. That's why you're having these fault lines that are rubbing rock on rock. And you're causing these are the earthquakes that are being caused by man. The problem that we have is that we're too bought into easy oil. The Russians have, I believe it's 371 wells drilled. 371 wells. Each well that was drilled is 18,000 meters onto the Earth's mantle. If oil went down to a penny a barrel, the Russians would still make money at it because they get it where it's being created, at the mantle. And so they don't take it from the fault lines. They leave that to the easy oil guys. But they've been doing this since they discovered that. And guess who? Actually, a guy named Joe Stalin back in the 1930s said to a bunch of scientists that discover how oil is created. It took them until the late 1950s and early 1960s to actually prove that oil was abiotic. They kind of knew it was abiotic back then, but he tasked them to actually prove it was. And then they did the laboratory experiments, and three laboratory experiments in Russia under the USSR in the 1960s actually proved that. It wasn't until 2004 that a laboratory in Sweden had got their hands on that material, the laboratory testings, and they redid the tests in Sweden and proved oil was abiotic. They were absolutely, oh my goodness, they're right. And then a little university in Texas called Texas A&M University about 2010 did the same thing and did the tests and went, oh my God, oil is abiotic, therefore disproving fossil fuels. The beautiful part about this is that when you understand that oil is made by the Earth for a specific reason, it's there to lubricate the fault line. It's there to allow, instead of rock on rock and crushing each other, it's there to lubricate that and allow them to move. How do you think when the mass of the Earth was all one continent, how do you think we got it to go as far away as Australia? New Zealand broke off. Africa was the center of it all. Then South America, North America. How do you think that moved so many thousands of miles? We didn't drill the oil. That's the oil that caused that to slide.
That's an interesting theory. I've never really thought of that way, Doug. But it's kind of interesting. But the fact is also that over the course of history, that the Earth has gone through earthquake swarms, where
absolutely
massive increase in tectonic activity. Yep. That wasn't created by man. So I believe that could be a mitigating factor, but I don't believe that's the only factor. I believe that we're going into a, like you said, what's going on with the sun directly affects the Earth in many, many different ways. I believe we're going into a period of high earthquake activity, and that's natural because the plates, they move and pressure builds. I mean, Dutch Sense right now, I don't know if you listen to Dutch, I do. One of the reasons I listen to that man is because of his actually his ratings on what he calls for earthquakes and what actually happens. And he runs on a constant 74 to 78% accuracy. For calling it earthquakes. So, that's not perfect, but it also merits my attention. One of the zones he's talking about right now, Doug, and really kind of giving a warning about is the Cascadia subduction.
Yeah.
And he's saying that because of other earthquakes that happen across the globe. He's figured out the pressure and how it affects earthquakes over here. And like I said, folks, he's not perfect, but when you got somebody running at 74 to 78%, so if he calls for an event to be happening in an area that you're living, and he's running at those kind of percentages, I would tend to listen. necessary precaution. If he happens to be wrong, and it's the 24% that he's wrong, well, okay, so he took precautions and everything happened. It didn't happen. But if he happens to hit you, and he's telling you about it, and there's been a lot of people over the years that wrote into that guy and said that thank you for saving our lives. Yep. So the scientists don't like this guy. Now, persecuted because of the way he figures out the energy and how it disperses and how deep faults affect surface faults, blah, blah, blah. I can't begin to understand it, but the fact that he is pretty accurate merits my attention. And he's talking about the Cascadia right now, and and I know if that one ever goes, Doug, holy smoke, our world will change forever, not just on the West Coast, but right across America, around the world, will change forever. If that one lets go the way it's capable of letting go. So I hope that doesn't happen, but he is talking about it and issuing warnings. So I'm listening. All I'm saying.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. You have to listen to people like that, because if you don't, you're going to wind up in a place where you really don't want to be. And so if that kind of accuracy, you really want to listen to a guy like that. So he's not right 26% of the time, but he is correct 75% or 74% of the time.
Exactly.
I'll take those odds and go to Vegas every single day of the week, and I'll clean out. I'm not kidding. I have a 74% chance of being right playing cards in Vegas. What?
I want to put $1,000 in your pocket. Take it down there for me, Doug, okay?
I'll bring you back $1 billion.
We got away from cannabis again, but it happens all the time because, when we talk about cannabis, it ties into everything else we're talking about, Doug. Maybe it doesn't appear like that to people, but it does, folks. Go ahead.
No, but I'm saying it does come back to this, because at the end of the day, yes, we don't need to be using oil all the time. So what can we use instead? Well, we look at the cannabis plant. Oh, we could do biodiesel from cannabis.
Incredible biodiesel it makes.
Ethanol from cannabis. Oh, my God.
Henry Ford was going to do that, Doug.
Exactly. You can make cars out of cannabis.
Stronger than steel.
So
imagine that.
All this stuff that can be done, and people say, well, we got to stop using fossil fuels. Well, you can't just shut that off. Are you nuts? If you produce a Tesla automobile, okay? What's a Tesla automobile made out of? Well, it's made out of aluminum, plastic, lithium ion batteries, and rubber for the tires. So where does all this stuff come from? Well, in order to mine lithium for lithium ion batteries, you have big mining operations, and all that equipment is run on what? Diesel. Oh, wonderful.
Yep.
When you're making aluminum, what are you making aluminum from? Well, it's done through electricity. Where is most electricity created today? Well, coal fire, gas fire, nuclears. Oh, well, so that's how you're making your aluminum. So you're using your hydrocarbons. Once again, plastics, same thing. Where do you get how do they make plastics? So there's a certain molecule within the cracking of the hydrocarbons that they save for making plastic. So, yeah, oh, well, you know, you're virtue signaling. I drive an electric golf cart that's worth $130,000. Oh, I'm so special. No, you're a complete idiot. Virtue signaling your own stupidity. Battery pack, it's more toxic than all of the fuel that you will burn in a Cadillac Escalade for the life of the Escalade. That battery pack, one battery pack out of the Tesla, is more toxic than that.
Wow.
So at the end of the day,
that I didn't know. So there you go. I learned something.
At the end of the day,
go ahead.
We can go away from hydrocarbons. We can go away from, because A, the Earth needs the hydrocarbons because of these tectonic plate structures and so forth. We've drained them. We've drained most of them. So you want to stop the massive Earth. I'm not saying that it'll quit all earthquakes, but all the big ones, it'll slow down. So let's leave the hydrocarbons where they need to be left, and let's start using biofuels. But how do we get to biofuels? Well, the best biofuels you can get to isn't corn. That's ridiculous. It's hemp. That's where you want to be.
Well, if it was up to Henry Ford, Doug, our whole world would have been different today, because he had an ethanol-based hemp fuel that was incredible. Yep. And he was going to power all his automobiles by that fuel, with that fuel. That was his plan. He was going to bring it to market and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, he was approached by the big oil guys, and that was shut down. And that's a tragedy.
But you talk to these so-called – I call them watermelons, but these so-called environmentalists. I call them watermelons. They're green on the outside, red in the middle. And if you start talking to them about biofuels, they have no clue as to what you're talking about. You start talking to them about hemp, you're just a pothead. No, we need to do wind power. We need to do solar, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, man, are you people stupid? I mean, truly stupid.
Well, maybe they're not stupid. Maybe they just haven't sat down and really looked at it, Doug.
Well, that makes
when
them
you
stupid.
Do, when you do, I think even a stupid person, I think a person with a very low IQ, if he sits down for an hour and actually looks at what can be done with industrial hemp, I think even stupid people might have the light go on. But go ahead.
Well, maybe I used the wrong word. Ignorant should be the word. Okay. These are ignorant.
We'll change it. We'll change that.
Yeah. Not stupid, because they're ignorant. Right. And they're ignorant to the facts that are sitting there in front of them. And they choose to, because ignorance is a choice.
It is. And you know, the old saying that you can't fix stupid, well, you know, sure, that applies to a good percentage of the stupid people out there, but some actually still can have the lights turned on. So those are the ones we're going to try and work on today. Because there's a few of them out there. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, but I mean, ignorance can be in order to get rid of ignorance, you just have to start reading the material, start understanding what other people are telling you, and start listening to what other people are saying to you. And then taking that in and go doing your own research. Don't just take our word for it. Go look this stuff up. Go read about this stuff. And then you'll have a whole different perspective, because I guarantee you the lights will come on, especially if you're this kind of fringe player, not necessarily a fringe player, but you believe in this climate change, global warming BS that they're putting out there. Well, maybe you got to go take a better look at carbon dioxide and what carbon dioxide really is. As a matter of fact, NASA came out about a year ago, I guess, maybe a year and a half ago, saying that carbon dioxide was a byproduct of global warming, not the cause of global warming. Oh, isn't that interesting? So global warming causes carbon dioxide, not carbon dioxide causes global warming. So when you start looking at the facts, then you start looking at other things. Well, solar, how good is solar? Well, it's not very good. Well, what about biodiesel? What about biofuels? How easy are they to do? Well, if you start growing hemp, you can get 3 crops a year of hemp here in Canada. You can go 4 to 5 crops in the tropics.
Yep, all the time.
And in the subtropics. So that's year-round. So now your production and the ground that you're growing the hemp in, there's now you take a crop of hemp out, you put a crop of tomatoes in. You'll have the best tasting tomatoes you've ever had in your life.
Exactly. You rotate your fields, buddy.
Correct.
What a and then, of course, like I said earlier, we got to feed our animals with that. And you'd have the ultimate for restoring human health, Doug. The ultimate situation. Go ahead.
Yep. So yeah. at the end of the day, Barry, hemp will elevate all of us. All of us out of what they want us to be pushed down to be all their whole idea of equality is to make everybody poor. Hemp will not only make you healthy, but it will also make you wealthy and wise.
Self-sufficient.
And self-sufficient is the other big exactly. one.
Take the power away from the people that are stepping on your neck. And you can do that with one big bag of seeds, guys. And I've never said a more true statement in my life that it could literally heal our planet from the inside out. You know, Rick Simpson said that to me about 8 years ago, Doug, on a radio show. And I had the pleasure of meeting Rick and had him in my house and did a tour of British Columbia. I got to meet all the doctors in British Columbia that are involved in medical cannabis and all the movements. And, you know, at that point in my life, I really was only looking at the medicinal aspect of cannabis. Now, I truly believe that the industrial use of cannabis, Doug, is as important or if even more important because of the side effects of using industrial hemp in our society. Society, how it will take away the chemicals and stuff that are causing all the physical disorders we see in our society. It's a full spectrum healing process of detoxifying our soil, eating feral hemp, feeding it to our animals, eating raw hemp in your diet every day. I've got a jar in my freezer. Every time I have a salad, I take out 4 or 5 leads. I put it in my salad. It's considered one of the top superfoods in the world by ingesting raw hemp. People don't know that. We got to share that information because when you start doing all these things to your body, all of a sudden your body starts loving it. Your brain gets clear. You got that energy to go out and tackle all this crap that's going on around us. That's what I see happening with me, especially because I really change everything I'm doing with my body, and my body just seems to love it. So try doing that, folks. It's really one of the most important things you can do is really paying attention to what you're eating and what you can do to help your body right now, because we are under attack. No matter what we look like in society, we are under attack. Our health is under attack. Well, the sickest people in the world, Doug, you know that, eh?
Well, as I was saying earlier, the whole reason that they're doing this social distancing and locking us down and putting us in masks is to compromise our immune system. So, ladies and gentlemen, go and I kid you not, I do 22 supplements every day. I do high dose vitamin C, high dose vitamin D, along with 22 other supplements: magnesium, selenium, vitamin K, et cetera, every day without fail. And every day, after I take these vitamins and minerals, I'm just like, wow, woo, I'm walking on air. I eat properly. I try to get as much exercise as I can. I go for walks and so forth. I can't do what I used to do because my back is really bad. But I try to get out there and get some exercise in every day. And that's really all you need. Do not, under any circumstance, wear a mask outside. Under any circumstance, wear a mask outside. In the history of mankind, no virus has ever been caught by anybody outside, ever. So quit wearing your masks outside. That is absolutely silliness, bordering on stupidity.
I wish you could get that message to the people that are walking around with masks and make them believe that, Doug, because it drives me nuts seeing this go on in our society, especially parents that are putting masks on 9 and 10 and 11-year-old children, and now children being made to wear masks at school and everything they're doing to our kids. Folks, you know, this is doing damage to our society right now. Even if we stopped it right now, it would take years to repair. This is a real tragedy. It's a tragedy what's going on, Doug, but, you know, why can't people wake up to this? Like I said, that's a question I ask myself every day because, you know, I'm not a super intelligent guy, but I can see this and understand what they're doing. And I know there's a lot of people out there with greater levels of intelligence than me, and they're walking around with masks on their face. So we're going to figure out a way to get to them anyways, Doug. Go ahead. We only got a couple minutes left. This hour, of course, went really quick. So I'm going to get you to share a few thoughts here for the last couple minutes, and then we'll have to shut up the show for the week, Doug.
Okay. Well, I mean, just very quickly, people, you should read your mask bylaws. It says it's very clear in the bylaws that it says to be for interior use only. They know very well that they can't mandate you to wear them outside because they know very well that the science says you'll never catch a virus outside. That's ridiculous. Anyways, the hemp, cannabis, hemp, industrial hemp, wonderful stuff. Cannabis, medicinal cannabis, and so forth. We can change the world. Ladies and gentlemen, we can change the world. I do The Myth is Canada. Come to our website. You want to learn how to see the de jure government, come to our website, themythiscanada.ca or mythiscanada.com. We could change the world here in Canada. We can institute within our own constitutions that we create for ourselves clauses that state that cannabis and industrial hemp must be grown, must be used, and must be part of our governance system. How wonderful would that be? I was telling Barry earlier today that in the first original 13 colonies of the United States, when they wrote their constitutions, they had a clause in there stating very clearly that 1 acre of hemp per 100 acres of growing had to be dedicated – I'm sorry, 1 acre of land had to be dedicated to hemp for every 100 acres of farming. And a lot of the farmers would grow a lot more than that, but they had – it was constitutionally written.
I love it.
Go
love
figure it. That. Yeah. The original, 13 states. Yeah.
Cool.
They knew, and we have forgotten all of our history due to the simple fact of one word: television.
Yeah, the enemy of mankind, Doug.
My father used to call it the boob
tube. My dad too. idiot box.
The idiot box, because only boobs and idiots would watch this.
Oh, if we only knew then what we know now and knew how true my dad's statements were, buddy, we would have listened to him. It's like he told me Trudeau was a commie, he was going to destroy Canada when Pierre Elliott Trudeau became prime minister, and I laughed. Boy, he had it. He had it.
Yeah, my dad and my stepdad both said the same thing.
Anyways, Doug, I got to let you go, buddy. Our time's up. It's always a pleasure having you in. Thanks for coming in on short notice today and having a conversation. We talked about cannabis today, and it's something we both are passionate about, so it's been an enjoyable conversation. I'll have you back here real soon, bud, hopefully.
Thank you very much, Barry. Thanks to your audience for being there and listening to a couple of crazy old guys go on and on.
Amen. Okay, well, folks, hey, thanks. We got to thank Steve, of course. Before I shut the show, I got to thank Steve for producing my shows, putting up with me every week. I'd be lost without the man. So thanks, Steve, for what you do. Thanks for tuning in today, folks, and listen to us babble. You know, when we talk about industrial hemp and the fact that it could really revolutionize our world, we're at a point now where that's really, really necessary, because we do see major effects on all aspects of growth on the planet. I look at the biosphere of our soil. I read reports on that. I read reports all the time on the health of our oceans, and it really disturbs me. But we can offset that all and turn it around by implementing certain simple changes in our society. And one of them would be fully embracing the miracle God-given plant called cannabis/hemp. Thanks for joining me this week, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. You guys all have a great week. Thanks for tuning in. God bless you all, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com, seeking solutions.